This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. On this edition of the program, the politics and policy of gun safety legislation. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. In the aftermath of yet another deadly mass shooting in America, Congress is giving no sign that it intends to counteract gun violence or improve school safety. On February 14th, a gunman opened fire with an AR-15-style assault rifle at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, killing 17 people and prompting a rash of student-driven lobbying for new gun restrictions. The United States has been here before. 32 people were killed at Virginia Tech University in 2007. U.S. Congresswoman Gabby Giffords was grievously wounded and 6 people killed in 2011 in Tucson, Arizona. 28 people, most of them just 6 or 7 years old, were killed at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut in 2012. 9 people were killed at the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in 2015, and 58 people were killed at a music festival in Las Vegas last year in what was the deadliest mass shooting in modern U.S. history. After these horrific shootings, Congress was still unable to pass meaningful gun safety legislation. However, this time analysts and observers say it seems there is a difference. Students of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School seem to refuse to let the deaths of their friends and teachers and the terror they felt hiding in closets and running from bullets fade from memory. The young people have marshaled their grief, fury, and energy into a potent grassroots movement. Survivors have spoken out in the media, organized local marches, and even met with President Trump in the Oval Office, emphasizing the need to ban the assault rifle and pass other meaningful gun control laws. On March 24th, they are planning a gun control march in Washington called March for Our Lives. The event will include student speakers, musical performers, guest speakers, and video tributes. Well, critics of any kind of gun safety legislation are quick to blame mental health and violence in our culture as the underlying culprits. Yet analysts say troubled people and violent videos exist in many other countries, but only the United States is awash in gun deaths from homicides, suicides, accidental shootings, and the ever-increasing mass shootings. They argue that to seriously confront gun violence, there have to be fewer guns, especially the semi-automatic rifles, along with large-capacity ammunition magazines that become the weapon of choice among mass shooters. But the deaths of 17 students and teachers in Parkland, Florida, prompted a growing list of U.S. companies and financial firms to reevaluate their gun industry investments, firearm sales policies, and even preferential treatment for NRA members. Gun control has long been one of the most divisive and emotional issues in Washington. President Trump, after meeting with the grieving student survivors and members of Congress, seemed to embrace background checks, securing schools, and even restricting gun sales for some young adults. But after meeting with the NRA, the powerful gun lobby, he seems to have demurred. Well, with us to discuss the politics and policy of gun safety legislation are two distinguished analysts. Michael Barone is a political analyst and resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. That's a conservative-leaning policy group based here in Washington. And Jim Kessler, vice president for policy at Third Way. That's a centrist-leaning think tank also based in Washington. And both gentlemen who are frequent panelists at these VOA microphones join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Gentlemen, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Jim Kessler, let me begin with you. You are an expert on this issue. You've talked about it, studied it for many years. Do you think we're at a different inflection point now after this Parkland shooting? Why or why not?
So if you asked me right after the Parkland shooting, I would have said no. I would have said tipping points rarely make a difference. I think I was wrong. I think this one is different. It's a very different set of victim groups than what we've seen in the recent past. They're very articulate and able to speak for themselves. Social media is light years ahead of where it was at Sandy Hook. And we're starting to see some changes here. You're starting to see changes in Florida, which, you know, it's the Sunshine State. It's also known as the Gunshine State because it has extremely lax gun laws. The National Rifle Association has had its way there for 20 years. And now they're going to suffer really the first defeat in two decades.
Michael Barone, what's your take on this time?
I disagree with that to a considerable extent. I think that there's some serious consideration being given to things like gun violence restraint orders. State of California has one of these. Not clear whether it'll be effective, but it might help. The possible restrictions on bump stocks, which were used to allow mass, though not precision, firing in that Las Vegas shooting. But I think one question needs to be asked here is, are these provisions going to do any good? Can they solve the problem? You talked about assault rifles. Assault rifles were banned by federal legislation 1994-2004. They were defined in cosmetic terms. They were rifles that had the same ballistic characteristics as other things, but they had little doodads attached to them and so forth. How banning studies of that have shown that it had no significant effect. The fact is that we've had a country which in the last 25 years has had a huge reduction in crime. Violent crime has been cut perhaps approximately in half in the United States. And at the same time, we've had a huge increase in legal gun ownership. That suggests that some of the solutions that have been offered, and by some people who really just want to get rid of guns in America, don't want any private ownership of guns, is the case in Europe, won't have a positive effect. And I challenge one other thing that you said, Carol. We don't see these kind of things in other countries. We've seen mass gun attacks in Nice, France. We've seen them by Muslim extremists. We've seen them by right-wing extremists in Norway, killed, I think, a couple hundred people. We've seen these things in Europe and so forth. So the United States is not alone in having those. And many of these things, of course, happen in countries that have legislation, which is the sort that gun control advocates have been seeking.
Well, that's a point well taken. Nonetheless, we are seeing these types of mass shootings all too frequently, Jim Kessler.
Yeah, there's no comparison between the number of mass shootings and gun murders that happen in this country and any other country. I mean, it's not even close. So we have a country that's true. We have a lot of gun ownership in this country, where there's probably about 350 million guns in private hands in America. About 40% of households have a gun in the home. The number of households that have a gun in the home hasn't really changed over the last 40, 50 years. The number of gun households where there's multiple guns in the home has changed quite a bit. I would say that the crime rate has gone down in America. There's all sorts of reasons over the last 25 years. It was also after the passage of the Brady Law, which required background checks for firearm purchases for the first time. I was involved in writing that law and passing that law, also putting 100,000 cops on the beat. I think those things had something to do with reducing crime in America.
Now, let me ask you about the NRA, the National Rifle Association, a very powerful lobby here. Now, some gun rights advocates, especially the NRA, insinuate that any attempt to regulate gun safety is tantamount to an assault on the Second Amendment, which states a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. However, the amendment does not prohibit the state from enacting laws to ensure safety. I think that's the difference. There may be some, a very small minority in this country, who maybe feel very strongly about the Second Amendment, Jim Kessler, but what about having your cake and eat it too? In other words, why do you think that the NRA and other gun rights advocacy groups seem to think that any kind of attempt to regulate gun safety or regulate guns is somehow an assault on the Second Amendment?
Right. So the Second Amendment is probably the most awkwardly written sentence in American history, open to a lot of interpretations. The Supreme Court has ruled on the Second Amendment on several occasions. Most recently, I believe it was 2009, known as the Heller decision. And it said that the Second Amendment confers an individual right to own firearms in America. And I've always believed it was an individual right. But that right allows for reasonable restrictions for safety and to prevent crime. Nearly every gun law that you're seeing up there, those that would raise the age to buy from 18 to 21, to require criminal background checks, to reduce the lethality of certain firearms, those would clearly be constitutional. You know, the notes within that Heller decision say it's constitutional. The National Rifle Association takes an absolutist position on the Second Amendment. I think it helps them raise money, number one, and it's a very simple point of view. And yes, they are a very, very powerful organization. They can be beaten. They're a lobbyist organization. They're nothing more than that.
Your take, Michael Barone?
Well, they're an organization with several million members that has spent a lot less money than organization like Planned Parenthood, political contributions and advocacy. My understanding is that the NRA cooperated in the working out of the background checks of the bill that Jim Kessler referred to. They tried to play what I consider to be a constructive law. I think that deserves notice. One of the problems we've seen with some of these mass shootings has been that the background checks or the procedures that should have alerted people to the danger of these people were not carried out properly by government. We had laws that were not properly carried out. I think that we should agree that laws that are in existence here and are consistent with the Second Amendment as interpreted in the Heller decision, 2008, I think, but there was another one in 2009 covering the states, city of Chicago, that those things ought to be carried out. We had a situation where, in line with the Obama administration proposal of avoiding school-to-prison things, the killer in Parkland, Florida, was not given a police record, which would have or should have barred him from obtaining a gun legally, which he did. We've had the FBI was alerted to him. They didn't do anything about it. They said they couldn't find him, even though he has an unusual name. That's government incompetence, and I'd like to see it perform properly in these cases and to track down these people. The armed services did not inform local law enforcement about some of these individuals when it should have done so under existing law, and they were unable to get guns and so forth. So I think we're agreed we should enforce the laws that we have.
Sure, we want to get into that, but before I go to a break, quickly a follow-up for you, Michael Barone, and that is that we're hearing rhetoric from the NRA basically saying that any type of gun restrictions are actually tantamount to taking away all individual freedoms. Isn't that a bit hyperbolic to conflate taking away individual freedoms with people wanting to enact gun safety reform?
Well, I don't understand the NRA to say that all restrictions on gun ownership, that they cooperated ultimately late in the game, as Jim Kessler said, in the background check procedure, and they are not in favor of giving people with criminal records, allowing them to purchase guns. And so that's a restriction on gun rights that they support and that Justice Scalia in the opinion in Heller indicated that government might legitimately pursue without regard. We've had a couple proposals here that I think are interesting. The Florida legislature, which just passed a law, which you referred to in the introduction, Carol, my understanding is that includes a message to arm teachers, that will allow teachers to be armed and to carry concealed weapons. There have been proposals to get rid of the characterization of gun-free zones. Most of these killings happen in gun-free zones. And there's a nice little sign when you enter there saying this is gun-free. Unfortunately, the killers don't obey those signs, and they are guaranteed a situation where no one can shoot back.
We'll have more in just a moment, but first you're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Jim Kessler, Vice President for Policy at Third Way, and Michael Barone, political analyst and resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, from whom you just heard. We're discussing the politics and policy of gun safety legislation in the wake of the Parkland shooting. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find that download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to Gloria Ola. She's a loyal listener from Ibadan, Nigeria. If you want to hear your name on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, Jim Kessler. Certainly a very contentious issue, as our discussion has illustrated. What about this idea of arming teachers? This idea came out of the recent discussions. A lot of controversy there.
Right. Well, so we had an armed guard at the school. A lot of good that did. Teachers don't want it. I think it should be up to the locality. If they want to do it, they should do it. If they think that that's right for them. Let's not pretend that that's going to solve the problem, okay? We have 350 million guns in private hands. In the United States, we have the most lax laws that you can possibly imagine about carrying firearms as a concealed weapon or even open carrying in this country. And Florida is one of those states that has very, very lax laws that says you can carry just about anywhere. And it has a huge crime rate. The states, actually, that have the most lax concealed carry laws tend to have the higher crime rates. If 350 million guns isn't enough, if 3 million people in the country that have concealed carry permits isn't enough, like, really, what is enough?
Well, Jim is right about Florida. Florida was the first state to have a must-issue concealed carry law back in 1987. And I remember at that time, my response was to say, gosh, I'm afraid that there's going to be gunfights over traffic altercations. There are going to be all that carry concealed weapon holders are going to commit violent crimes and so forth. Been very little of that from the 3 million people. It turns out that responsible citizens tend to behave responsibly. I've changed my views because it seems to me that the facts indicate that carry concealed weapons laws have not been an avenue towards crime. And the argument that NRA and gun rights advocates make that maniacs, vicious people like these murderers, are more likely to carry out their evil intent with guns in situations where they're assured no one else is armed seems to me to make a certain amount of sense. John Lott has argued that carried concealed weapons have accompanied a period of about halving of violent crime, and that one reason may be that people don't want to commit crimes where they feel somebody may shoot back.
Jim Kessler made a very important point. A certified armed guard was at this school, and he was nowhere to be found. He did not intervene. So how is it that a teacher who has no experience and no training, even if they got training, it's a very messy situation?
Well, Jim Kessler says that locality should decide this. That makes a lot of sense to me. And obviously, you don't want to arm teachers that don't want to be armed. I'm not good with small machines, and I don't want to be armed, even though I think that it's possible that having some people armed may do some good.
All right, let's admit that that may be the case. But again, this is just one prong in a multi-pronged attack that we need to...
Well, we also saw the Broward County Sheriff's Office issued an order that the police that were on the scene should not go into the building and so forth. There are a lot of people that I think did not do their duty in connection with the Parkland shooting and in connection with other mass shootings, the gay nightclub in Orlando. And
I agree with you that there's a lot of people who did not do the right thing. Let's just say, number one, the most incompetent by far are the legislators who have riddled our gun restriction laws with so many holes. You have to be a moron if you're a crazy person or a criminal and not be able to get a gun. So I'm part of the team that helped draft the Brady Law, riddled with so many loopholes that there were so many ways around that you didn't have to go through a background check. Let's just take concealed carry, for example. About 35 states have very, very lax concealed carry laws. Nearly every one of those states also has a law that says if somebody with a concealed carry permit commits a crime, you are not allowed to notify anyone that that person had a concealed carry permit. Why do we put those laws on the books? It's to get any sort of information out there that people might use that might be able to pass a restriction. It's because the National Rifle Association, they're very powerful, and I don't want to put the blame on them. They're only as powerful as the sheep who they lead through the nose, which are the legislators. I'm not for banning all guns. I believe in a constitutional right to own a gun. I have family members that own guns. I think they play a valuable role in this society. But they have riddled every single gun law with so many loopholes that it is nearly impossible for them to be enforced in a graceful, rational way.
Michael Barone, you mentioned universal background checks before, and you said that the NRA does...
They oppose universal background checks.
They
are adamantly opposed to universal background checks.
They support the background check law that's now in
effect. So I was there. The Brady Law in 1993 that we finally passed, it was introduced in 1986. The NRA opposed it all the way when George Bush was president and Ronald Reagan was president. Finally, Bill Clinton was president. We had enough votes. And at the very, very end, because they didn't want to take a loss and have legislators abandon them, they agreed to it as long as there were certain stipulations put in that frankly weakened the law. So yes, they came over at the end. They were not a helpful partner in this law.
Now, these assault weapons, AR-15, they are designed for war, Michael Barone. And even now we're seeing private sector initiatives like Dick's Sporting Goods and others are starting to, given the dearth of legislation and other restrictions, they are imposing their own limits. Dick's Sporting Goods now says they will not sell high magazines or assault weapons to anybody under 21. You know, what does this say about where we are in terms of this debate?
Well, I think the term assault weapons is a misleading term. Every weapon is an assault weapon. Assault under the old English criminal law was putting someone in fear of being hit.
But let me just say, the term assault weapon was the gun industry came up with that word and the NRA came up with that word. That is the word that they came up with. That was not what the gun control groups came up with.
And to be fair, the young people who are going to be marching on March 24th and have been marching and speaking out against the AR-15, these assault rifles, which are meant for war, and they're saying to ban them, and they're not talking about other guns, but that could reduce the gun violence that we're seeing as an epidemic in this country.
I just think that it's a distinction that doesn't make much sense. Many of these mass killings were with other weapons. I think handguns were used in some of them. The fact is that if you want to reduce gun deaths, I suppose banning all guns would be one way to do it, except that with 350 million guns in the United States, that's obviously not going to work.
Well, again, Michael Barone, just that's the problem. There isn't either or zero-sum game. I think what a lot of people are saying, like Jim in particular, we have a Second Amendment. People have the right to bear arms. But certain types of weapons to certain types of people, these types of so-called bump stocks, that's where restrictions could certainly help diminish.
We do restrict, as I understand it, automatic weapons where one trigger pull produces multiple bullets. Semi-automatic weapons, as I understand, which are constitute most of the guns in circulation in the United States, is one trigger pull, one bullet. The automatic weapon ban is uncontroversial. Everybody supports it. The Supreme Court, I believe, has ruled that it is constitutional under the Second Amendment. So there's no functional difference between the AR-15 and some other hunting rifles in terms of the operation of the weapon or the capacity to kill. You're making a distinction there that really is just cosmetic.
Is that right, Jim?
There is a difference. It's true that the term assault weapon is more a term of art than a real sort of mechanical difference. But this is how it was defined in 1994, and I think that definition is still matters today. It basically banned guns that were designed to be shot from the hip, as opposed to a rifle which is shot from the shoulder, or a handgun which is shot with the arms. And that is a military-style weapon that you hold at the side. They aren't really used for hunting. You don't hunt from the hip. You hunt from the shoulder or lying flat. That had other attributes: a folding stock to make it more portable, detachable clips, a threaded barrel so that you could hold onto the barrel, wouldn't heat up as you shot, so you could do many, many rounds. So there were differences. There was designed to say, like, okay, this is really a warfare-type gun versus hunting and self-protection and sporting.
We have to wrap up now, so let me pose this question to you, Jim Kessler. Where we are now, given the young people who are speaking out after the Parkland shooting, organizing a big march on Washington later this month, the private sector initiatives, i.e. the private boycott of the NRA by some companies, where do we go from here? What are the politics now in terms of a chance of moving this debate forward? And we must take into consideration midterm elections. To what extent will candidates' positions on gun reform legislation or gun control be a potential litmus test for some voters?
So I think most of the action you're going to see at the state level, and we're seeing action in Florida. I don't expect much at the congressional level. This is how I think it is going to change, though. After Sandy Hook, a Republican legislator from a gun state, Pat Toomey in Pennsylvania, with Joe Manchin, a Democrat from a gun state, introduced a universal background check bill. Pat Toomey barely won his reelection, but he would have lost were it not for him introducing that bill and him getting some votes in the suburbs. I think what you're going to start seeing is Republicans who have been aligned with the NRA, hook, line, and sinker, from states like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Florida, Indiana, other places, they're going to be separating from the NRA, and this will become a less partisan issue. And I think things are going to start to pass in a few years. I think you're going to see a dynamic here because Republicans are going to see this as a way to keep their jobs, not lose their jobs.
You get the last word on the politics, Michael Barone.
I'm not sure that will happen. We'll see. I think that we're going to see some action at the state level, bans on bump stocks, for example, which allow semi-automatic guns to be fired more quickly, though with less precision and aim. That's something that I think is going to pass in many places, quite possibly. Gun violence restraint orders and how well these are working. I think one of the sad problems is that it's impossible to prevent murder. That's been illegal for a whole long time and yet continues to happen. Fortunately, in this country, it's been happening a lot less than it was 25 years ago, even though we have more guns. And I think we ought to be more competent in the way that we enforce the legislation that we have. The murderer in Florida could have been stopped in many ways if we'd had intelligent enforcement of the law from law enforcement, and we didn't have that. That's kind of a tragedy. I also think we may see fewer gun-free zones because they're not gun-free once the murderer gets on the scene.
Well, on that note, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, Jim Kessler, Vice President for Policy at Third Way, and Michael Barone, a political analyst and resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your terrific insights on this controversial issue. Encounter was produced in Washington. Thanks to Rebecca Ward for booking our guests. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on the Voice of America.